Hi, I'm Angie Cho, registered architect and lead AP, and this is Holistic Spaces, brought to you by The Many Shades of Green. And today I'd like to talk to you about an exciting topic, post-consumer recycled materials. It's actually pretty confusing. What does recycled mean? What does post-consumer recycled mean? And what's the difference? Post-consumer recycled content indicates that a portion of the content is made from recycled materials that you or I put in our recycling bins through private or public means. So that means this material has gone through the hands of a consumer. Otherwise, just recycled means that it was likely made from virgin materials such as leftover scraps from factories and overproduced items. So why post-consumer recycled? When you recycle, it eventually needs to be purchased by somebody else to recycle. If people like us are purchasing post-consumer recycled products, we create a market demand for these post-consumer materials. Sadly, if there's no market for recycling, all the material we recycle may end up in a landfill. Also, it wouldn't hurt to have a good percentage of the paper and plastics that already exist to be salvaged and reused for post-consumer recycled products. In conclusion, I encourage you to make a choice for post-consumer recycled materials whenever possible. By creating a market and demand for post-consumer recycled products, we can support and grow the infrastructure for more environmentally green living.
Hi, I'm Maxine Margot Rubin, and welcome to The Many Shades of Green, our program that engages in conversations that move to raise your eco-consciousness. My guest this week on The Many Shades of Green is Angie Cho, founder of Holistic Spaces. She is a LEED certified green architect, a BTB feng shui practitioner. She has written a new book entitled 108 Ways to Create Holistic Spaces. How do you create functional, sustainable, and balanced spaces within your home by using feng shui techniques? What steps can you take to enhance the flow of qi? Angie will give us some ideas and green tips that will make your home more harmonious and set you on a path to Zen. So, Angie, how are you?
I'm so good, Maxine. How are you?
We're on that path to Zen right now. We have to... So we're going to get into your book a little bit, but I wanted to get into feng shui right off the bat. It didn't come into the States till about the 60s, is that right? Something like that. I read that in one of the paragraphs in your book that I actually read.
Oh,
yes.
My mentor must have written that.
Okay.
Yes, it came into the 60s, and it got popular in the 70s and 80s through Professor Lin Yuan, who is the founder of the BTB Feng Shui School.
Now, BTB Feng Shui, how does that differ from another form of Feng Shui, other areas of it?
BTB Feng Shui, well, there's many schools of Feng Shui. There's okay. BTB Feng Shui, there's the Compass School, there's Classical Feng Shui, there's Form School, there's a lot of different schools. And also, every culture has their own form of geomancy, which means looking at the land and the space and the environment and seeing how to best locate yourself. So the difference with BTB generally is that it's more of a westernized approach to feng shui. It's more recent, and there's two main characteristics. It doesn't really prioritize the cardinal directions. For instance, north, south, east, west aren't the most important thing. What's more important is where the energy comes into the space. So that would usually be the front door. We call that the mouth of qi.
The mouth of qi mm-hmm. is the front door of an apartment, so or a house. So when you walk in, you're going to feel a particular way because of the energy or the way things are placed or what's in your house. I mean, what would you want to have in your front entrance that will make it, you know, make you feel the energy is positive?
Well, the front entry is the first thing that you see. Even if you live in a house that has a garage and you come in through the garage door, your front entry represents your face to the world and how the world sees you and the first thing that people see. So that symbolism says a lot about how opportunities come to you, how the world sees you and views you. So some simple things that can improve the energy of your home, looking at your front entry, is to brighten it up, to make sure that the bulbs you have there are very bright. You have the opportunity to bring a lot of brightness to that space. A light bulb represents fire energy. And another thing is to keep it very clean and tidy. And by keeping it clean and tidy, you automatically watch what's happening in that space. You keep you're mindful of that space. You pay attention to it on a daily basis. And another thing that you can do is make sure that your door can be found. A lot of times, especially in New York City apartments, you don't even know how to get to the, you don't even know how to buzz the front door. There's no buzzer. There's no number. If your friends can't find you, how can opportunities find you?
Yeah, if your friends can't find you, you're definitely in a bit of trouble. Now, you mentioned tidy. And I know there's a lot of different thoughts about tidy. They say geniuses have clutter, and then they create through their clutter. I mean, or the clutter just builds up around them, but they still can focus. Yet, clutter also can present problems in terms of how you're organized, how your life is. So, if something's cluttered, do you need to work on it forever? Is there steps you can take to start doing it in increments? And what is behind that theory of decluttering your space?
Well, clutter is really a modern day phenomenon, right? We didn't have clutter in ancient times. We didn't have so much stuff. And that was one thing that when we think about green initiatives, we think about reducing, reusing, and recycling. But we often forget the first one is reduce. And how do we reduce the amount of extra objects that we have in our home? So there's actually an Einstein quote that says, if a cluttered desk is a sign of a cluttered mind, what is a sign of an empty desk?
Right. And that's where my genius reference came in. Thank you, Einstein.
And there's those are actually two extremes where you have a very cluttered desk where you can't find anything, of course that impacts how well you work, how clearly you think. But if you have an empty desk and nothing's going on, then it also means that there's nothing going on in your mind, nothing going on in your work. You don't have anything happening. So that we would say that's very yin.
So you need balance, actually.
You need to be
some
in
stuff
the middle.
On your desk. Right.
Okay. You need in the middle. Or maybe it needs to be a process of clutter and removing, because maybe if you take snapshots of the desk at certain times, it might look cluttered, it might look empty, but life isn't static like that. We're constantly moving. So when you approach clutter in your home, I think the first thing to think about is it really representing a block in your life? Is it really causing angst in your life? Like, for instance, for a while, I had like a lot of magazines piling up. And every time I saw them, I was like, oh God, those magazines that I keep meaning to read and I'm not going to read, and they keep piling up. And it becomes a source of guilt and it weighs on you. And that takes up a lot of energy to ignore that. So if it's representing a block in your life, then it's definitely something you should address. But if it's not bothering you, you don't need to worry about it.
I have that with mail. It just piles. And there's mail that, you know, the mail I need, I address. The mail I don't need, which is like from anything in any place, it just stays there. I mean, we started keeping mail in the mailbox that we weren't even, because we didn't want to bring in, well, mail that we didn't need to address, you know, certain catalogs, certain things. And I think we drove our mail lady crazy. Oh. Sorry. But again, the clutter issue is definitely, you know, a problem. And achieving that balance, you know, is the way to go.
Well, there's that one approach where you only handle it once, like for your mail. If you touch it, you need to deal with it. So make sure you only have to deal with it one time. So if you touch it, you throw it away or you address it.
Yeah, well.
That's one way to approach it. And, you know, also, it's okay, like I said, it's okay to have some clutter. For instance, my sister has two daughters and she has a table that's her homework table. That's a clutter table. You just throw everything on there and you make a space in your life to accommodate things that are messy and you know that you can't address right away. So maybe it goes in that area and eventually you clean off that area when you get sick of it.
So there's in achieving this balance also, it's I think important, and I read that you take time to meditate and have some space to do that. And if you have a little tiny apartment in New York City, a studio, I mean, how do you figure spots to do that? I mean, where would you go in such a small space?
One of my meditation teachers
he says it's really great to have a spot that you always go back to. For instance, if you had to make your bed area, like for instance, you had to create a bed every time you went to sleep, it would be very challenging and you might not, you know, you might just sleep on the floor sometimes. So same thing with meditation. If you don't have a designated spot, you may not do it very often because it's not there. But I hear what you're saying, not a lot of people have room. But space, the space could be while you're sitting at the edge of your bed, or it could be sitting on your sofa, or it could be sitting at your desk. Because when they talk about space and meditation, it's not just physical space, it's also creating space in your mind and creating space between your thoughts and creating space within yourself.
There's so much stress that I know people do not take time to meditate, which is something they should do. And how would you get the message across to people to take that time? And is it part of the feng shui practice to do that? And how would they do that? Or what message would you tell them?
Well, I feel that meditation is definitely an important thing to incorporate in your life. But if you're not called to it, you know, maybe that's not the right thing for you. But if you are called to it, you could go take a class at a meditation center. Like I go to Shambhala Center, and they'll teach you ways to incorporate it into your life. But I think the benefits of, one of the biggest benefits of meditation for me is that I rarely take the time to just let my, I rarely take the time to be compassionate enough to myself to give myself a break and let myself just be present and think. I'm always thinking about the next thing I need to do, or the next person I need to take care of, or the next meal I'm going to have. And that's all okay, but if I can sit down and just be with my thoughts, then I can let all those thoughts happen and observe them and watch them. And then it creates space in my mind to really be able to focus on things. Because otherwise, my mind just, without the meditation, your mind just becomes very, like a wild animal.
Right. Well, people need to take a chill time in their crazy work day. And it's kind of hard to do. But maybe even connecting to nature, go outside. Go to a park. I know there's eco-psychology, which is something that seems to be sprouting up. And again, I saw that in the book, a reference to it. What is that about?
Oh, environmental psychology?
Yeah, environmental eco-psychology.
There's like a one book I was reading where there's been studies done where people are in hospital spaces and they heal faster when they see green space, or they have access to green space. Or you can start to see that someone's actually healing when they have they begin to look outside of themselves and worry about things besides themselves, so like about their environment. So studies they did was, they studied, you know, the same amount of people with the same surgery, and the ones that had a view to green space and trees healed much faster and they needed less painkillers than the other group.
So this study was in a hospital setting, or?
Mm-hmm. In a hospital setting.
Wow, so the people who saw greenery felt better, even looking out a window, not necessarily being mm-hmm. outside, but just seeing it, and the people that didn't weren't healing as fast. So that really shows you that we need to get outside and we need to have space outside. Now, how could you bring some of that green inside?
Well, you could do that. We've talked a lot about plants before in previous mm-hmm. interviews.
Right.
Bringing in plants, but even bringing in the color green. So you forgot to ask me your
famous
question.
We're
going
to get to that in the next half there.
Okay.
We're really going to get green in the next half, because I want to hear all these shades that I don't even know about. So.
Well, you can definitely bring in some plants, and not just small, little, dinky 4-inch plants, but bring in a big, like 3-foot fern or ficus tree or something. Bring in some living plants, and that not only does that bring greenery into your space, it improves the air quality and it improves your ability to take care of something outside of yourself. There's a lot of, it works in a lot of ways. And also bringing in the color green, because the colors of nature are much more soothing to the eye. We've just evolved that way. And that's another thing that these environmental psychologists have studied, you know, how colors affect our eyes, how it affects our well-being and our emotions.
So we're going to talk about more green, because I'm very interested in the various shades of green, or the many shades of green. And so to be part of the conversation with Angie Cho, tweet us your thoughts at TM Shades of Green, and we will be back after a quick break.
Hi, this is Gary U.S. Bonds, and you're listening to the Many Shades of Green.
We're here with Angie Cho. We're talking about green things and feng shui and how the relationship with color and space and energy. And there's something called the Bagua map, which has 8 trigrams.
Trigrams.
Okay. We're going to learn now what that is. And then we'll focus on some of the colors, one of them being one of my favorite, or my favorite color, which is green. So can you give us a little background on that, the Bagua map?
Sure. The Bagua map is the feng shui map, and it's a conceptual grid. It's a 3x3 grid, and it creates 9 different areas, although there's 8 trigrams, but that's for another conversation.
Okay.
But the 9 areas represent 9 different areas of your life, and it has different connections. For instance, the first one we'll probably talk about is new beginnings, which is related to green. It's related to wood, the element of wood. It's related to a certain area of your home. It's related to family. It's related to the spring. It's also related to, like, Chinese medicine, you know, the meridians. They also use the 5 elements, or in Taoism, it's like the same thing. Or the
what are the 5 elements again, so people know?
The 5 elements are wood, fire, water, metal, and earth.
Okay. There's a group called Earth, Wind, and Fire, so they're pretty close.
They're close. They're missing
close.
One.
I love that group.
The metal.
I love the metal.
But they they're a metal group,
they
right?
They play metal. They use metal, right?
Yeah.
So in terms of the colors and the numbers, there's a number associated with each color as well.
That's
so
correct.
Let's start with green. And also how many shades and how many shades are represented mm-hmm. of green. And so tell me about that.
So the green area, the feng shui map, it's called, the Chinese name is Jun, and it's related to new beginnings and family. And also it relates to the season of spring, like I mentioned before. And it's interesting because we're talking about the many shades of green, because there are many shades of green, and mm-hmm. what do they represent? So I would say very light green would be a very yang green, because when you think of light green, you think of like a sprout pushing out of the ground, and there's that very forceful energy.
To push it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to come out of the shell, to push through the soil, and to really grow. That's why like sprouts are so nutritious, because it has all those enzymes and it's really full of life energy. So that would be lighter green. And as you get medium green, that's more neutral. So you remember earlier we were talking about balance, like mm-hmm. you can go to one extreme or the other. Medium green would be in the middle. And dark green would be more related to a mature tree, like if you think of a huge
A redwood,
yeah, like that deep, dark green, and relates more to knowledge. The greens in general are all very healing and supportive, because the color is really comforting to us. And it also reminds us of growth and trees and expansion and change and moving on to a better place from where we are now. So it represents new beginnings as well.
New beginnings and plants and trees and grass. But there's also blue-green waters. You know, there's deep green waters. So that's another thing. That's a flow, you know, but mm-hmm. you need water for anything to live. So is there a water sign? Is there a water color? Is there a water number?
Well, actually, green and blue are both related to wood in the feng shui system.
Wood?
Yes,
interesting.
The wood element, which is related to like plants mm-hmm. and greenery and life and that cycle of life. And water is actually related to the color black, which is...
Interesting.
It's like it's depth of wisdom. Black, like if you think about an ocean, if you're out in the middle of the ocean and you're looking at the water, you actually see black. There's so much going on underneath, and you can't see what's happening underneath, but there's a lot of motion and a lot of activity deep in the ocean. So that's where black comes from.
Yeah, this was all from the Chinese feng shui, ancient. You know, how far back does this map go? I mean, I'm just curious, the origins of it and the what the thoughts are of the ancient Chinese people when they or whoever developed this.
Well, this feng shui Bagua map that I use is a newer map. So it's in the I don't know how many thousands of years, but it is quite old. But there was one before that called the Former Heaven Bagua, And you know, I'm not actually I don't think I'm qualified to talk about it today because
okay.
it's really complicated.
Okay.
But it's
we don't want it
it's a little bit different.
Anyway.
It's a little bit different. But water is also related to this black area of the Bagua map, which is related to your career and your path in life and how you move through the world.
It's interesting because one would think black would be more, you know, people dress in black at funerals, people, you know.
Well, in
black.
China, they wear white, and they wear black at weddings, or they used to.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a different, you know, an Asian, you know, culture thing that brings different colors to different things. So I would imagine that white at a wedding.
Well, black is also.
Oh, black at
a wedding? So black is the absorption of all colors, though. And mm-hmm. white is actually the reflection of all colors. So white is almost the absence of color, where black incorporates all color. So it makes sense that it's knowledge and depth of knowledge because it's absorbing all the energy to create that black.
What about red?
So red. Red is...
Got to get red in there.
Well, when you...
It's fiery,
what do you think?
And cool.
Exactly.
And
red is very fiery. It's passionate. It's related to fame. The fame area of your... The feng shui Bagua map and
fame.
Yeah.
So all the celebs have like red things in their background.
They have good fire chi. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like it's how the world sees you and how people recognize you, and it could be, it's your reputation and how you appear to others.
I know. I also saw in the book that get red sheets. Get red lingerie.
Yes.
You know, so that's
are you
like,
wearing any red lingerie today?
I'm actually wearing black and blue. I don't know.
Actually, there's fashion feng shui too, how it affects your clothes. So the blue is actually very, it's like a royal blue, but mm-hmm. I would say with the black, you're dressed very water.
I'm water.
Mm-hmm.
I like the water.
Mm-hmm.
Born in August, I like the water. So this information is in the book, and also there's also a lot of tips in the book. Could we go over a couple of tips for people to be conscious of saving and reducing, and things that they should be looking out for in terms of what they need to do to make their carbon footprint a little less as well?
Sure. Well, my book is about really simple tips to incorporate feng shui and green design into your home. So one is that you could stop using bottled water and to get a filter in your home. I love to get the seltzer machines so you don't have all those seltzer bottles. That's one really easy way. Another is to look into getting a green energy provider into your home so you're not just getting the regular dirty energy, but you're putting your dollars towards renewable energy like wind energy.
Yeah, we had Green Mountain Energy was on. I have them. I use them. So
Great.
Or anything like them. They have similar companies out there. So that's really, really important. What other tip can we have for the spring? One more.
To refresh your space by getting rid of 9 things in your closet.
9 things in your closet?
Yes, 9 things.
Can you do it?
Can
I do it? If you come to my house, oh God, I can't even imagine what was going to happen over there.
Once you move 9 things out of your closet, I promise you, things will start moving in your life.
Okay, I'm going to start doing that because I need to be moving. So those were some tips. I hope everyone jotted all those things down and will jot them down. And Angie, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay. We've been talking with Angie Cho, founder of Holistic Spaces, feng shui practitioner and designer, as well as a LEED certified architect. Angie has written a new book entitled 108 Ways to Create Holistic Spaces, which is available on Amazon.com. And you can also go to what's your web?
AngieCho.com with the J, AngieCho.com, okay. Or HolisticSpaces.com.
Okay, I wanted to get that in there. So this book will definitely help you lead a greener and more balanced life, which is good for the soul. So thanks for joining us for the Many Shades of Green. Visit us on Facebook, send us a tweet at TM Shades of Green, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Check out our production company, Glacier-Entertainment.com. A big thank you to ABBA, Brian, and Mikey for all their help in getting the show out each week. I'm Maxine Margot Rubin, reminding you to pick your shade of green and raise your eco-consciousness, and we'll see you again next time.
Be it ever so humble, I don't want to go home. It's time to go. I don't wanna go. Wanna hear the blues, babe? Something low. 'Cause I don't wanna.